This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. One thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. And for decades, Angie's helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. Get all your jobs done well at Angie.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Are you caring for an aging parent? Are you searching for answers? Welcome to Senior Care Live, a program dedicated to you, providing information, education, and resources, helping you become the best caregiver you can be. I'm your host, Steve Kuecker.
Hello and welcome to Senior Care Live. Thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. This program is all about educating seniors and their caregivers, helping them make informed decisions. And this is a great place to listen and learn. And so many people consider Senior Care Live appointment radio. Thousands of people literally listen to this broadcast each and every week, and I am so thankful for that. Thank you very much. And if you're new to the program, I hope you will too. If you have a question, as always, you can visit online at Senior Care Live, L-I-V-E, SeniorCareLive.com, or call the phone number 1-800-331-6445. All right, so we have a really great program for you here today. It is all about elder law today with my friend and special guest, Amber Thaling. She's an attorney with KC Elder Law. And Amber, welcome to Senior Care Live.
Thank you.
All right, so for our listeners, you will absolutely want to write this phone number down. We are going to review so much stuff. You're going to say, now, wait a minute, I need to know more about that. Or I need to call Amber, I have a question. Or we need to have something reviewed, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the phone number, 913-338-5713. So KC Elder Law, 913-338-5713. You could also go online at kcelderlaw.com. KC Elder Law has offices in Overland Park, Lee Summit, and Kearney, Missouri. How about that? And before we get started, I just want to let you know a little bit about Amber. I've known Amber for, I don't know, Amber.
Too long.
15, 18 years.
Something like that.
Well, as long as I've been operating Senior Care Consulting, and that is coming up on 19 years, actually, which is, so I've known you that entire time. And so Amber is an attorney, but a lot of people may not know she also has a master's in social work. So let me tell you something. That is an amazing combination of education and experience and knowledge. And so Amber is very uniquely positioned and qualified to provide some incredible advice and guidance through some of these, you know, sometimes very difficult situations as we're caring for our elderly loved ones. So Amber, again, I'm totally sincere. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to be with us here on the program.
Well, thank you, Steve, for having me.
All right. And so, first of all, before we jump into kind of the meat and the potatoes, if you will, I have so many questions for you, Amber. First of all, how are you and the team at KC Elder Law doing as we're coming out of this COVID-19 pandemic? How are you all doing?
We're doing really well. We are seeing clients live. If they are more comfortable, we are also doing Zoom. I've also done just conference calls. So it depends on the client's comfort level, if they'd rather come into the office or still be via Zoom.
Okay.
we do work all over, I mean, the entire state of Kansas and Missouri we can work with. Zoom has been a great addition to that. It just makes it a little bit easier. People aren't having to travel as far.
Okay. So Casey Elder Law, just like Senior Care Consulting, for about, 13, 14 months, it was all virtual. It was all Zoom.
Yes.
Or
to our chagrin. Yes.
Right. or on a phone call. And I'm an in-person, I want to look you in the eye. I want to shake your hand. I want to be there. It's just my service, and definitely your service as well. It's a very personal, we're dealing with personal matters here and very, very important matters. I just so much better in person. So I'm so glad that you're able to meet with families if they're comfortable with that in an in-person basis. But if they're not, or if they're out of the area, you can still meet with them virtually as well.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been super to have clients come in the office. It's nice to see faces.
Yep.
And the smiles in person, and it's just been really wonderful.
No doubt. Okay, so let's jump in. We're just going to start off on 101, and the big question here, what is the difference between estate planning and elder law? And the reason I ask that is a lot of people in the market, they will interchange these two terms or phrases, and they should not be interchangeable, I guess you could try it, but you shouldn't do it because they're two very different things. So what is the difference between estate planning and elder law?
Well, elder law also encompasses estate planning. Estate planning, you go to just a straight-up estate planning attorney, they're looking to tell you basically how to avoid probate when you die. Elder law looks at the whole transition from, hey, we're healthy, you know, we have clients in their 30s and 40s, even 20s, you know, planning for that end of life, their kids, and then what happens along the way until you do pass. You know, people age, health declines, so that brings up a whole different set of issues. We see things through a different set of lenses than your typical estate planning attorney.
All right, and so estate planning and then elder law. And so I know a lot of times with elder law, you're planning on, obviously, what to do if you're living and what happens when you pass away. But then that huge question and that huge kind of unknown area, what happens if you're living, you're aging, and then you get sick along the way, and all of a sudden you have expenses, you have care needs, and how does that impact your entire estate? And I know that you and the entire team at Casey Elder Law, you're all experts at dealing with that. So that is that's the good news there. And you can help with estate planning as well. You can
right.
work with both areas. Is that correct?
Right. And within the elder law estate planning part, for our elders or aging clients that are having health issues, not all of them are old, then our documents look towards that time.
Okay.
In life when you need to transition. So I have several couples, maybe the diagnosis is fresh. You know, they just found out 2 months ago somebody has Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, you name it. And there is a higher risk for needing long-term care. So our documents prepare for if that bottom falls out and that needs to happen, that the family, the loved ones, the spouse can step in and do, you know, further planning to help protect the estate.
All right, very good. And then the next term I think that I'd like to try to unpack here a little bit. So power of attorney. So what does that mean, and what is power of attorney?
Well, there are two types of powers of attorney. One covers finances, and one covers health care. The financial one, there are two different types. There's one that's called springing, and it only kicks in at incapacity. And then we have, you know, the durable general. It's in place the second that you sign it. It doesn't take any power away from anybody. I have one in place, as do all of us. And when our kids turn 18, they're signing theirs. That it's that way because a lot of our clients, they still have capacity, but they start wanting help. You know, calling the insurance company, you know, don't hear so well on the phone, so daughter, son, friend, can you please take care of this? So that's why we like the ones that are not springing, because frequently our clients are not incompetent, but they just need assistance.
Yeah, and that one sounds a little more flexible, but you're also trusting that person with power of attorney not to abuse that. Is that correct?
Exactly. And I always tell people, well, if you've appointed them and it's springing, it's only contingent on your incapacity, or it is contingent on your incapacity. If you've appointed somebody, you need to trust them. If you're leery about it, then don't list them.
Well, this is a little off topic. Last week, I talked about World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and I talked about different types of elder abuse, and one was elder financial abuse. And I received a call from a listener, and she's very upset. And the long and short of it is her friend granted her daughter power of attorney, and her daughter is abusing it. And she wanted to know what to do. I gave her some phone numbers and how to follow up on that. But the bottom line is, if you grant someone power of attorney for your finances, if it's not a springing power of attorney that is effective when you are, when you've lost your capacity or competency, then you better trust them. And I think that's a right. That should be one of the huge takeaways of this entire program, is you need to trust that person. So you talked about power of attorney for healthcare. Now, how is that different?
Power of attorney health on health care is contingent on incapacity. Nobody can make health care decisions until a doctor has determined that you can no longer make health care decisions for yourself. So only when you've been declared incompetent or incapacitated can your person step in and make decisions on your behalf.
Okay. And then is an advance directive the same thing as the health care power of attorney?
It is not. The health care directive, some people call it the living will, it's that part of, and we have it in the same document, the first part's the power of attorney, the second part's the living will, is that person's time option to determine if at some point they're terminal and can no longer make their own decisions, they can say, you know what, I do not want to be kept alive artificially, and here's the things I don't want keeping me alive artificially. Or some people say, hey, keep me alive at all costs. So the questions are asked, and then it's up to them to determine which path they want to take.
Okay, we're speaking today with Amber Thaling, attorney with KC Elder Law. And if you're like me, this is a fascinating conversation. If you have a question, you're interested in working with KC Elder Law, here's the phone number. Write it down, 913-338-5713, or you can visit online at kcelderlaw.com. And I'll have more with Amber coming up next. But first, the Senior Care Live question of the week. Regarding power of attorney, the person granted the power of attorney can make decisions for their loved one while living and after their loved one passes away. Is that statement true or false? The answer coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, go to seniorcarelive.com. And don't forget, you can stream this program to any electronic device at seniorcarelive.com and through the app audacy.com. And that's audacy.com. All right, back to the Senior Care Live question of the week. Regarding power of attorney, the person granted the power of attorney can make decisions for their loved one while living and after their loved one passes away. Is that statement true or false? And the answer is false. The answer is false. And Amber, why is that statement false?
Well, it is false because your power of attorney ceases at death. So the power of attorney expires when you do.
That's right. Okay. So and that's just the easiest way. And I'm not an attorney, but I've answered that question hundreds of times. And yeah, that's my favorite way to answer that. The power of attorney expires when the person expires. So up until then, and then we'll talk about what happens. You know, what type of power or say do you have after that person expires or passes away? So we will get into that here in just a second. But Amber, I want to circle back on that power of attorney. Great information that you were able to share, and I appreciate that. I have a question here. So, and this one's a huge one. So for our listeners, dial into this one, pay special attention. If someone has Alzheimer's or dementia, is it too late to authorize a power of attorney document?
It is not necessarily. It depends on where they are in their progression. In our office, there's some shades of gray, but it doesn't matter if they know who the president is or what day of the week. Those are not requirements, and that's frequently misunderstood. So what we're looking for is, are they oriented as to where they are? Do they know their loved ones? Things like that.
Right. So if you say, well, who's this, lovely young lady sitting here to your left? And if they say, well, that's my daughter, and I just don't know what I'd do without her. They're very oriented. They recognize their family. A very different story if they say, well, I don't know who she is, but I sure do like her dress. Okay, well, then that's a whole different deal, right?
That would be correct.
Right. So, again, you have shades of gray, especially in law. Some things are pretty obvious. Some things are not. And so if you have a question about your own personal situation, reach out to Amber Thaling and the great team at KC Elder Law at 913-338-5713. That's 913-338-5713. You can also go online. It's an excellent website, kcelderlaw.com. kcelderlaw.com. All right. And then there's this.
And now, myth versus fact.
Okay, so we're going to do, Amber, I'm glad you're here today. Let's do a little myth busting here. So this is one of my favorite segments, myth versus fact. And okay. And frankly, there are a lot of myths out there.
Lots of them and misunderstandings. You are correct.
Oh, boy. And so I routinely set the record straight on this show. I think that's one of the things that Senior Care Live has noted. I pull no punches. I kind of tell it like it is, even if it's not so wonderful to hear. So here's an understanding in the market. You have to sign your house over to the nursing home before you can qualify for Medicaid. Is that a myth or a fact?
That would definitely be a myth. A person's house is an exempt asset. It doesn't count against them. So they definitely do not have to sign the house over.
Okay. And I've heard that. I'm sure I know you've heard it 10 times more than I have. But I've heard that, no joke, at least 100 times over all the years. It is stunning. So if you're in the market and you're thinking about choosing a particular nursing home and they say, but before you move your loved one here, they own a house. You're going to have to sign that house over to us before you can qualify for Medicaid. That is just not true. It's not true. Okay, here's another one, Amber. You can't qualify for Kansas Medicaid if you are a Missouri resident. Is that a myth or a fact?
That is most definitely a myth as well. We have a number of clients, especially because we are on the state line, so it's more prevalent here probably than in other states.
Sure.
But you can own property on either side of the state line. And so, for example, a Missouri person owns Missouri property, they can go to the Kansas side and qualify for Kansas Medicaid.
And vice versa.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that is definitely a myth. Here's another one, and I've heard this, just I've heard it at least 100 times. If you're from Missouri, you must be a Kansas resident for a minimum of 6 months before you can apply for Kansas Medicaid. Is that a myth or a fact?
That's another myth. Your residency, as far as Medicaid is concerned, is established the second you move into a Kansas facility.
Okay. And I believe it's you move to Kansas on Monday, regardless of whether you're from Missouri, you have property in Missouri, or any other state, on that day, moving into a Kansas nursing home, you are a resident in the state of Kansas for Medicaid purposes if you have the intent to stay. And obviously, you're moving into a nursing home to receive care. The intent to stay is there, and boom, you are a Kansas resident. So again, if anyone says, well, you need to sell your house and rent an apartment in Kansas and 6 months later, no, that's absolutely not true. It's just not true.
That's correct. We've had a number of clients that have gone directly from a Missouri hospital to a Kansas facility and vice versa. So sometimes the kids live on the other side of the state line, so they're moving their loved one closer to them. But regardless of the situation, you qualify. You're qualified or eligible, I should say, the second you walk in, you know, the second you move into the facility.
Yep. And I even had a person at a particular nursing home argue with me about that. No, you have to be, you can't do that. Well, they can't live here and get Kansas Medicaid and still have a house in Missouri. And so I had to argue. And then they had to run it up to their legal team. Their legal team said they agreed with her. And I'm like, that is just not the case. So it took a long time to educate these folks because they were absolutely convinced that that was the case. And it just was not.
Yeah, we've had that with multiple clients, and even though we try to educate the staff and explain it, they don't believe it until it's approved.
Yep, okay. All right, and then one more. You must use your entire spend down amount to pay for nursing home care, and you cannot use it for any other purpose. Is that a myth or a fact?
Well, the money has to be spent on, if it's a married couple, on either one of them, depending on what their spend down amount is. And same for a single person. There are some exceptions to that, which I think you want to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, a disabled child, things of that nature.
Okay. All right. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a fact.
For more information about the facts, stay tuned to this program or contact Senior Care Consulting at 913-945-2800 or visit seniorcareconsulting.com.
All right, I'll have a whole lot more with Amber coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, go to seniorcarelive.com. And don't forget to check out all of our podcasts at seniorcarelive.com. And, you know, if you subscribe to Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, or Player FM Podcast, all you have to do is search out Senior Care Live, and then they'll start flowing to your inbox each and every week because we're on all of those platforms and more to come. All right, so we have just a wonderful program today. Our guest today, Amber Thaling. She's an attorney with KC Elder Law. And if you want to reach out to Amber and the excellent team at KC Elder Law, here's the phone number, 913-338-5713. Or you could visit online at kcelderlaw.com. And Amber, you have offices in Overland Park, in Lee Summit, and Kearney, Missouri. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if someone lives in the Northland and Kearney is a little bit easier to get to than Overland Park or Lee Summit, you can request your meeting at that location, and that'll just be make it really easy for you. So it's great to have these options. So, all right. So, Amber, I'd like to address the difference between a will and a trust. And again, people kind of throw these terms around, sometimes interchangeably, and they're definitely different. So what is a will?
A will, actually, by definition, has to go through probate. A lot of people think a will avoids probate, and it doesn't. It's a good reflection of your wishes, of how you have things titled, your bank accounts, your house, because not everybody needs a trust. But a will, by definition, like I had a couple come in, the house was titled just to the two of them, and their will says it goes to my kids, because it was titled to the two of them, when they're both gone, that house would have to go through probate to land with their children.
Okay. And so what is a trust? And then who, we'll leave it there. What is a trust?
A trust is a different way to pass assets at your death. It gives you more flexibility in how you want to spread things out, who's in charge of managing it. Because how we explain it is beneficiary designations only get you so far down the food chain. Because people say, well, you know, my kids are in all my accounts, so why would I need a trust? Well, if one of your children predeceases you, where do you want your money to go? And it allows for that. I've got a family with an only child who is in her 20s and at this point in time, no children. So they have said it goes to our daughter. If she doesn't survive and has no heirs, then they were able to list out four or five different charitable organizations of where they would want it to land.
Okay, so it's very, very specific, and then your assets flow through that trust, and two, it'll carry out your wishes, and it'll flow to a person or an entity, but it's a replacement for a will, and it's much better in one regard, because it's very thorough, it checks all the boxes, and it does avoid probate, is that correct?
That's correct. Another benefit of a trust is you're putting how, you know, we've had families with some family dynamics. And so they really need one person in charge of selling the house, paying the final bills, and then making the distributions. It should not be all the kids. We had another family, and what I tell people is size of your estate doesn't dictate whether or not you need a trust. Had a family that had, I don't know, $1 million in real estate, whatever, and it was going to their five boys or the survivor of them. All the boys got along, so they didn't need a trust. Simple beneficiary designation solved their problem. But again, there were five heirs, so they had plenty of backup.
Okay.
Something happened to one or two of the children before them.
Okay. All right. So then the next question is then who needs one? Then who describe a situation where a person or a family would need a trust?
Well, kind of like I explained with the family that things would go to charities if there's family drama. And it really is best to have, like, let's say I had a client that there were three children. Two of them didn't get along so well. All three children were treated equally, but one person was in charge of making sure everybody got their money.
Okay.
And then some people have complex distributions. I want 10% to go to this child. We have a special needs child. This much needs to go to them. So it gives you more flexibility on how you structure your estate.
All right. And then what are some of the different types of trust? Because I've heard different terms like a such and such of a trust. And so what are some of the different types of trusts available?
Well, the primary that we deal with would be a revocable living trust that we just discussed. And then there's also irrevocable trusts. The irrevocable, you're stuck with the terms, basically. So somebody can set it up, but there's no changing the structure of it.
Okay. And so, you know, I've heard some horror stories about, you know, where a person or a family, you know, they had a trust and it had just zero flexibility and they were kind of just stuck with it. And it actually, in the long run, the big picture, actually cost the family a lot of money. So would that be an irrevocable trust? Irrevocable sounds kind of permanent or where it's not flexible.
And we've seen those come our way, probably from very well-intended attorneys for the most part. Some are not. But it just doesn't, I mean, a good chunk of the time it just doesn't make sense. People think it's going to protect it from Medicaid. It does not. A revocable trust, and neither does an irrevocable trust, protect it from Medicaid. It avoids probate. But it doesn't shelter it from Medicaid.
You know what? That would have been a good myth versus fact, because I don't know how many times I've heard people say, yeah, well, we'll just put all of our assets in a trust and then qualify for Medicaid. Well, that if you have assets in a trust, that's still an asset and it has to be accounted for. Is that correct?
Correct. It depends on how they have the beneficiaries of the irrevocable trust set up. So there's a lot of nuances to that.
Okay.
On how it would work and the timeline of transferring those.
Okay. But the more common, the more flexible one would be a revocable trust, which means that it does have some flexibility. Is that correct?
That's correct. And our power of attorney also includes the ability to amend a trust. from. So I'm my parents' power of attorney. I have the authority to go in and amend their trust if it was appropriate. I have to be in line with their wishes, but I have a sister, and so if she became disabled, I could go in and say, hey, we need to change the distribution so her share is protected, so it doesn't affect any benefits she may be receiving. So you want some flexibility in there. Also, to change trustees of a trust. Somebody may die. Somebody may have their own health issues. So it's just a good idea to, in our world, to have that kind of flexibility.
Excellent, excellent. Amber Thaling, attorney with Casey Elder Law. She can be reached at 913-338-5713 or online at kcelderlaw.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. This is a consumer alert. Consumer alert.
All right, here we go. Amber, I've heard this too many times, and we just have to address it. I've heard so many times something to the effect of, well, you just want the government to pay for your nursing home care so that you don't have to, so you can kind of save your money. But you know what? I'm sure there are people out there that have a lot of money and they're just not willing to part with it, and that's not the right thing to do. So I'm sure that happens, but I would say the majority of people, at least that I've worked with and that I'm aware of, that's just not true at all. There are very specific reasons why you would want to qualify a person for Medicaid. And one example of that, and I know you see this a lot, let's say we have two spouses. One spouse lives at home. They're the community spouse living independently. And then you have one spouse that needs, medical level care at that nursing home, the long-term care level of care. And then that's a perfect example of when you would want to do a division of assets and protect the assets so that you can qualify the one person needing the care for Medicaid. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, if people call us with large estates and want to talk Medicaid, that's not what we do.
That's not a client for you.
Correct. I mean, somebody came in with $1 million, wanted to get their spouse on Medicaid. That's just not how we roll. But there, most of the situations, obviously, they're calling us, that we see is where, you know, the community spouse is at home and how much do they get to keep, how much has to be spent down, and then options for protecting that, what we refer to as the community spouse. While their loved one, their spouse is in long-term care, is getting their care covered.
Okay, and then so coming up, we'll talk about that. But the bottom line is, if you know a couple, and even if they own a house, they own a car, they have some assets. They're certainly not wealthy. It is a very, very good idea for them to reach out to Casey Elder Law and talk about some asset protection strategies. Because guess what? Here's the bottom line. Whether it's the husband or the wife, whoever the community spouse is living at home alone, right at this point, because their spouse just went to long-term care, they still may have a mortgage. And if not, they have insurance, property taxes, utilities, upkeep. They have all of the expenses, but only one person living at home. So you'd better believe, in many cases, it's a darn good idea to protect those assets and protect the ability of the person living at home to continue living independently at home.
Proceed with caution. This has been a consumer alert. Brought to you by Senior Care Live.
So coming up next, I'll continue my conversation with Amber Thaling, attorney with KC Elder Law. Don't go away.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, call now, toll free, 1-800-331-6445. Operators are standing by, 1-800-331-6445. I'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live. on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit seniorcarelive.com. And it's been my pleasure to visit with Amber Thaling, attorney with KC Elder Law. You can reach Amber and the awesome team at KC Elder Law at 913-338-5713. Or you could also visit online at kcelderlaw.com. All right. So, Amber, we talked about in the consumer alert protecting assets for a community spouse so that they can continue to live independently and you know, pay their bills, et cetera. And I think the law says so that the community spouse does not become impoverished due to the high cost of medical care for the institutionalized spouse or the spouse needing that long-term care community or otherwise known as a nursing home. So, you know, let's talk about asset protection strategies for Medicaid planning and start out just with the simple question, what is Medicaid?
The way I explain it, because sometimes Medicare and Medicaid people interchange. So Medicare is your health insurance. You go to the doctor, you have surgery. You need rehab. That's Medicare. Medicaid is like long-term care insurance. So it covers what you, what your income, whatever that doesn't cover, Medicaid steps in and picks up the rest.
Okay. All right. And for the purposes of this conversation, we'll talk about Medicaid contributing to the cost of long-term care or a person's stay at that nursing home. So another term, division of assets. So, if you have the couple, you could go through that asset protection strategy, do the division of assets to try to protect assets for that community spouse. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is it a literal division of assets, or is there more to it than that?
There is more to it than that. You are correct.
I suspected that.
What we tell people is to think of it as a bucket of money. It's not how much you have to spend. It's how much you get to keep.
Okay.
So for a Missouri couple that has, $120,000, the community spouse gets to keep $60,000 in their name. And the institutionalized spouse can have up to $5,000. Canvas, it's $2,000. So it's essentially half. The question is, how do we get you from $120,000 down to $60,000? And there are some really good options there. But it's not like you have to go out and spend $55,000 or whatever it is to get that person down to the $65,000. A little more than that.
Okay.
So there's options there. But yeah, it's not an actual division.
All right. And so, that makes sense. I like the approach. It's not how much you have to spend. It's how much you get to keep. So I think there are probably some examples of how KC Elder Law may be able to protect some assets for a family. Let's focus on Kansas versus Missouri. So the Medicaid rules, I think, are pretty similar, but are there any major differences in which could be an advantage of Kansas over Missouri?
Not so much for a single person, but for a married couple, yes. In Kansas, the community spouse's IRA, 401k, 403b type account is exempt. Medicaid wants you to report it. They just don't care about it. And in Missouri, it's all countable.
Okay, meaning that division of assets in Missouri, the community spouse has retirement accounts. All of that is countable and would have to be divided. In Kansas, that is off the table, it's an exempt asset, and whatever is left is divided. And that could be a huge difference in living in Kansas long-term care community versus a Missouri long-term care community. So I've had so many clients over the years say, they live in Missouri. They say, Steve, I'm no spring chicken, but I'll drive across the state line to see my husband or my wife if it means that I get to hold on to my $300,000 retirement account for Sprint. I worked, all those years for that, and I don't really want to cut that in half and have to deal with all that. So,
A lot of factors play into that. How much is the IRA, and how old is the individual? I had somebody come to me with $1 million IRA. Certainly, they could have qualified their spouse for Medicaid, but we're a little more conservative that Medicaid isn't for that individual.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. And you know what? If you live in Kansas, there may be some advantages to moving to Missouri. So this isn't a one-sided thing. It just depends on the individual situation. And that's why I always recommend contacting Amber and the great team at KC Elder Law. And that's 913-338-5713 or online at kcelderlaw.com. All right. And so, Amber, talk about just briefly about the caretaker child exemption.
Sure. The caretaker child exemption states that if but for a child, can't be a grandchild, a niece, a nephew, a cousin, but a disabled or a caretaker child has provided care for that parent the 2 years immediately prior to placement, then that house can be transferred to that caretaker child. A couple of caveats is a doctor actually has to sign off on that, that says, yes, I know that this, you know, this child provided care and, you know, they would have needed, you know, assistance sooner but for that child.
Yeah.
So I always advise families, if that's kind of the path you're headed down, make sure the doctor knows. We've had physicians not sign them because they're like, I didn't, nobody told me.
Yeah. So inform your doctor that your son or your daughter is helping you on a full-time basis, and they are the sole reason that you're not living in a nursing home. You could be rewarded by transferring the house to that son or daughter. And that's huge, and I'll guarantee you most people don't know that. And then what about the disabled child exemption?
Okay, so children that are on disability, assets can be transferred to them, and Medicaid doesn't care. So with a single individual that's got, you know, $50,000 and they need long-term care, they could transfer anything over the $2,000 or the $5,000, depending on the state, to that disabled child. And Medicaid says, yes, you need to provide for your child, so we're cool with that.
Yeah, and I'll guarantee you most people don't know that. Amber, quickly, what is a care contract, and why is it important to know what that is, and who should have one?
A care contract allows somebody to pay a third party, whether it's a child or, you know, somebody that you found on care.com, to pay them and Medicaid not consider it a gift. So otherwise, payments to Susan of, you know, $500 a week, Medicaid would say, well, what was that for? So it allows them to pay for that care and it not be considered a gift.
And
if you're with a third-party agency, one of the care, you know, in-home care provider agencies, mm-hmm. then that's assumed,
yeah.
obviously, fair
yeah.
market value. It's not a gift. But when you're privately employing somebody, Medicaid could look at that as a gift.
It's like an employment agreement, and it just verifies that you're paying for a legitimate expense and not transferring assets, which could result in a gifting penalty. So, okay. And then, Amber, I know that with COVID-19, you had to stop all of your workshops. You have excellent workshops, and you'll be restarting those here in the very near future. What's the best way? Should folks just go to your website and sign up for a newsletter to find out about when you're going to start those up again?
That would be a great idea. Yeah, so if they go to our website, they can sign up for our newsletter, and when we have a seminar coming up, we do send out that in an email to let people know what's coming
okay.
up and when.
All right,
we
and
did have one live one at an independent living facility, and mm-hmm. that went really well, but we don't know when assisted livings and long-term care facilities are going to be, will be opening that up.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So just go to kcelderlaw.com, sign up for the newsletter, and then you'll be informed when all of these excellent and, by the way, free workshops will resume here, hopefully here in the near future. So, Amber, thanks so much for being on the program today. I just really, really enjoyed it, and I hope you're able to come back sometime soon.
That sounds great. Thank you, Steve, for having me.
You bet. And I'm your host, Steve Kuecker, and I wish you grace and peace. May God bless you and your family on this day and always. Join me next week, right here on Senior Care Live.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie, and one thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. Because with every fix, update, and renovation, it becomes a little more your own. So you need all your jobs done well. For nearly 30 years, Angie has helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. From plumbing to electrical, roof repair to deck upgrades. So leave it to the pros who will get your jobs done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.